Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tassel, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, and I am in one of the more positive places I can be because there's cranes overhead. We're building things. We are in beautiful Canton, Maryland. Canton, as we used to like to say in Dundalk. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I do have Back to the Future scratch-offs to give away today. We are at D. Pasquale's, the new location. Don't go over to Highlandtown looking for us. We've upscaled. We've gentrified. We are in Canton here with beautiful women walking by, with strollers and people and young people and construction workers. And the smell of cheese and sausage and wine in the air. Our friends at Curio Wellness also putting us out on the road for our 27th anniversary. And for my 27th anniversary, which is on August 3rd, it's an eating festival. I'm doing 27 of my favorite things to eat in Baltimore. I haven't found my favorite one at Deep Pasquale's yet, but I'm going to find that today. I have a litany of guests here. We're going to be here for a couple of hours today in a week when Luke is in Wildwood, New Jersey, eating Max Pizza, fattening up, as the Orioles have been fattening up on Atlanta Braves pitching as well. Joe Giordano is a guy I've seen around town a million times. I'm an admirer for real of his work in the East Baltimore, and did a thing on where my father worked at Bethlehem Steel many years ago that I see down at the Museum of Industry, and I've never had him on the show. And he walked in today, and I know like what he looks like, and I definitely have seen him out. But have you and I ever had a conversation of any kind at a sporting event, or I don't think I've ever spoken to you, and I don't know that I put your face with your name before social media happened.
As long as you know the photographs, that's all I care about. The photographs are what you should know.
I know your byline because I'm a byline guy. As a kid who wanted a byline at the News American and the Sun, Joe Giordano. I had no idea what you now. I've known for time. I mean, I lived with Carl Ferran for a couple of years on Kane Street. Yeah. So, like, I mean, Gene Sweeney and Pat and all the people at the Sun that were there forever. Liz, I knew all of those people because I grew up with Gene Boyers, and I are still friends many 50 years later. But I don't know why I don't know you, dude. But this is the you know Joe, who I don't know, and Dom and the people that are here. You may know, between you, me, and Karinji's going to be here later. I got Nancy Longo coming. We might be a whole East Baltimore mafia. If you just put us together, we would literally know everyone. Bring Ed Hale over here because he built all of this.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
is he still around? What happened to that guy?
He's running for governor.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You didn't know this.
No. I mean, he had what I call the Ed Pyre State Building over here. The first Mariner building. But, yeah, I thought he evaporated. I don't know what happened.
He's on Eastern Shore.
Okay.
He's always had a place down
all those guys, they're all on the Eastern Shore. Scotty Donahue, all these guys are on the Eastern
Scotty's
Shore.
Scotty's in Florida.
Oh, he moved. All right, yeah.
No,
he was on the Eastern
Shore. I texted him about 2 months ago because I was with Marty Bass, and we're like, where's Scotty? I don't know. I texted him.
Yeah, he's in Florida.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Well, I mean, you got silver in your hair, and I shaved mine out today because I looked awful with Johnny O last. I looked tired. Baltimore's home, and I don't know that – I used to send resumes out in the 80s thinking I was going to live somewhere else. I have all these rejection letters from newspapers all over the world. I would have told you in 1991 my life would have been made in somewhere else as a newspaper reporter, as a journalist and all that. I've never left, and I've never been happier that I've never left because when I come and see things like this – that there are good things happening in Baltimore every day. As a photographer, as a journalist, you see the good, the bad, the ugly from Freddie Gray and murder. You've done it all. But there is a point where you and I today are sitting here in front of cranes where we are building things up in the city, on the city side. Yeah. We are a mile and 1.8 miles from where I grew up, where my son lives. I mean, I'm 2 miles away from where I lived for 20 years at the Inner Harbor. Everywhere I go, we'll see more friends here we have. Baltimore's a really special place in that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a low crime rate or a low homicide rate right now. Lowest since the 90s, I think. It's a different vibe. I teach at Baltimore School for the Arts. I see more tourists in Mount Vernon now, like coming up from the harbor, which is a good sign, you know, because I'm out during the day, so I see a lot of people with maps in their phones.
I took
around.
Strangers to Mount Vernon 2 weeks ago, and they thought they were in Paris.
Yeah.
Like, literally, we don't appreciate it for how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
And you're a guy who looks – do you look for the beauty or the ugly in life? What do you look for as a photographer?
I don't take sides. I take photographs.
See, I knew he's going to be a great guest.
Yeah, but I lived in Europe for a long time, so that's walking around Mount Vernon and just having coffee there. It's a good European vibe to the city. So,
what's your story, Joe Giordano? All I know is your name, your byline. I only really know what you look like through social media. You brought me your books, and you know your books of photographs and the work you do. I think of you in a black and white
because you're
a black and white guy.
Yeah, I mean,
you really are.
That's good.
And I am enamored with your ability to capture the Bethlehem Steel story. If you haven't been to the Museum of Industry, they have a whole room dedicated to your work down there. And the first time I saw it, probably a decade ago, I don't know, has it been there about that long?
No.
Seven or eight years?
So it was supposed to open the day of lockdown.
Oh, right? Shoot. All right, 2020.
So 2020. So it's 5 years. You know, it was supposed to be a 7 week run.
Oh, okay.
Well, when COVID shut it down, right? So after that, the museum graciously, they're like, you know, people come to see it, so we'll leave it up till we take it down, if that's okay with you. And I was like, sure, you know, leave it up. So, yeah.
What is it? Tell everybody what I'm bragging about the genesis of it.
So I started, when I moved back from Prague as a journalist, I worked for the Dundalk paper. And my first beat, this would have been in like 2003, 2002.
Dundalk Eagle.
Yeah. And
I'm from Dundalk. There ain't no Dundalk paper. It's the Eagle.
The Eagle. The Eagle.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. So my first beat was the steel industry. And this is when Mikulski, this is under Bush, George Bush. They were talking about tariffs, just like now. Mikulski was trying to save the, they were going to sell. Bethlehem Steel was liquidating selling, right? So, yeah, I mean, and this guy.
My mom was getting a $58 check every month.
So this guy who ended up becoming Trump's Commerce Secretary bought Bethlehem Steel and told the retirees, I don't have to take care of your pensions. Beat it. So that's what Mikulski was trying to do, was get the government to intervene so they can get their pensions back, which didn't work. What's Wilbur Ross, in case we're wondering who that is. So I covered all this. And then eventually I stuck with it. And, you know, when Trump came around, he talked about tariffs again in 2016. And there were, other, you know, like it had collapsed in Pennsylvania and, Ohio River, Ohio border up there. So I made an international project. I went over to the U.K., and I shot in some of their former steel towns over there, Redcar, up in Yorkshire. I went over to the Czech Republic, shot up on the Polish border with a lot of their former steel mills and steel towns, where the communists pulled out and they left them in just as bad spot as the capitalists pulling out. Right, so it's the same. So these steel workers get screwed no matter who's in charge. Right, so. So that's the project, and the show that is at the Museum of Industry is the photos in the show are focused on Baltimore, Sparrows Point, but there's a catalog that was a really nice catalog with the show that includes the Britain stuff, the stuff from England. I hadn't been to Czech Republic yet when the catalog
came out. See, being from Dundalk, you think it's us in Pittsburgh, we're the only ones in the world that made steel, right?
Exactly,
like literally in Bethlehem. And by the way, I mean, you've been up to Bethlehem?
No.
I went for a concert to see the Black Crowes about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They have literally, Google this.
I've seen it.
They've taken the steel mill and turned it into a casino.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's this postmodern, it's the most bizarre but beautiful and weird in the middle of, you just drive and you arrive in Allentown, Bethlehem, and you're there and it's almost like they're Camden Yards.
Yeah.
It's this gigantic grand thing that was the mill that now is a mall, sort of a postmodern mall hotel.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a Bethlehem Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
I've
seen it. For the steel project, you know, I didn't really want to show that because that, you know, I wanted to show that the communities like Baltimore that were like suffering from the collapse of the steel industry, right? It's like Johnstown, Mingo Junction, all these places that were all.
Well, a lot of these places weren't connected to big cities either.
No, that's
they
what
were
I
literally
mean.
In the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah, well, not really in the middle of because they were on the Ohio River, right? So if you go up the river, you know, they're not too far from Pittsburgh. They're not connected to a city, but they're not far from cities. You know, and these are like a lot of these mini mills and stuff. You know, the communities really collapsed. You know, when these mills left. You know,
they were the jobs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, here, I don't know if you want to call it fortunate, but you know, or not. But I mean, our peninsula is now, you know, Amazon warehouses. I mean, there's jobs, but they're at will pay. They're non-union. You know, and within less than a generation, like literally. Okay, so Bethlehem Steel shut down officially. The blast furnace came down 2012, right? So we're talking
13 years,
right? So that's less than a generation. It's a little over a decade, right? So a little over a decade. All the
went from 80,000 jobs to zero, like
right,
literally,
right.
Over 30 years,
yeah.
Right?
And
yeah.
then you know you have the warehouses. So now you have no manufacturing, right? You have supply and demand work. You have no unions. You've got at-will firings and no industry on that.
You're not making
peninsula.
Anything.
No, no,
you're not creating.
You're
moving
just,
things, right?
Yeah, it's just moving things. So, you know, it really set the peninsula back, you know, 70, 80 years, you know, especially with the no union work that's down there. You know, like none of those are union. None of the warehouse jobs are union, as far as I know. So
Joe Giordano's here. He does real photojournalism. Well, give me your background. Where'd you grow up? Give me the story. Because you came in, you're like, I used to hang out with Jack Beal. I've seen you
yeah,
around
yeah,
town. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, you got Berkshire guys.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm a Colgate
guy,
you know?
I'm from Berkshire. I grew up the street from Jack, down the street. Yeah, I went to Patapsco High School.
What year?
90.
So you grew up with Brian Bennett, Bennett.
Yeah, yeah.
Doug Bennett was my best friend growing up. We
yeah,
lost
yeah,
Doug
yeah.
and
yeah.
Brian Edwards, all those guys over there. Yeah, all the Berkshire goons.
Yeah. Yeah, I just saw Edwards last year. I do a thing for Jack every year in December, but I couldn't last the year before last because I was away last year. But yeah, I just saw Brian. I see those guys.
Brian and I traded baseball cards
for
years and years.
Yeah.
Danny Wiseman was mm-hmm. part of your world there, the Liberatore boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Dante, I talked to, by the way, I'm going to be out in Eldersburg next week. Dante can't make it because he's out of town, but you know, we all try to stick together, but all those names I just name to you.
Yeah.
All their parents either worked at the Point
uh-huh.
or worked at GAF
yeah.
or worked at Lever Brothers or GM. Worked at GM.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Brian and Brian and Doug's parents, they lived on Old North Point Road. Dad worked at GM and moved to Framingham.
Yeah.
To Framington, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And his Brian went to school with my wife in Manchester, New Hampshire. They made a life in New Hampshire.
Oh wow.
So their
yeah.
family left Dundalk to go yeah. to New Hampshire to have a life
right.
to work in Massachusetts
right.
in 1982, 83
that
when
early?
When
oh, wow.
things were they were making the Astrovan here
yeah,
right
yeah.
for a minute
yeah, yeah,
right
that was the last one that rolled out I think was the Astrovan
yeah and my uncle worked at the GM plant all yeah. my neighbors from Colgate Berkshire where we grew up three out of every four houses were serviced by the kinds of jobs we're talking about
right
literally
yeah I mean that's what I mean you know the whole peninsula is no longer like that. So,
but it is something. I mean, there are jobs.
That's what I was saying. There are jobs there, but they don't have the fallbacks and the things that you could depend on back in the day. You know.
Well, probably all more important that the port's coming back to life here, and I know AI and automation and so much of that.
Yeah.
Is I mean, I'm using this summer to dive into AI myself to try to just figure out what it can be used for as a companion and assistant. I don't have employees anymore.
Yeah.
You know, calendars, all of that sort of automation stuff. It's not Chinese to me, but it would have been 2 years ago.
Mm.
But I also understand the internet was Chinese to me 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And this cell phone and how technology has moved forward, your art, your craft
yeah.
of being a photographer, and again, I live with photographers, I was friends with photographers, the Wachter family, all of that. It was all film, it was developing, it was all that. Digital sort of moved the photography universe in a dramatic way for an old sort of
right,
analog
yeah, yeah.
photographer in your
yeah.
way, right? It was a paradigm shift.
Well,
right?
I never really shot because the shift to digital was like 2000.
Turn of the century is what I would call it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like mid-90s. And so I was still in high school. I never shot for a newspaper. Like, I never shot analog for a newspaper, right? I only shot digital for newspapers.
Okay.
So I'm, yeah. So.
So you never got the chalk out and had to mark up and crop
no.
pictures.
I mean that was how old are you?
I'm 57.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be 57.
All right. So you're.
I worked
yeah.
at the News American.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched pictures get cropped.
Yeah.
I watched pagination. I didn't do hot
so
metal.
I'll be 52. So we're not that far off.
Yeah.
But we are in technology, right? Because like when you know I was still in middle school, you were I worked
at a newspaper in 84. You didn't start till 03. So it was a complete generation.
So,
you know?
But like in middle school, I had Mac computers already at the end of 84, 85, because that's Holabird, right?
Right, sure.
So that's what I mean. So even though we're only a few years difference.
Yeah, Mr. Right? Statham.
You look younger than I do. So
that's all right. I shaved this morning.
I know. I should do that. Of course I had Mr. Statham. Everyone did. You know, he was there till like the 90s, I think, till he passed away.
I've had it. Mr. Statham's very much alive.
Is he alive?
Yes.
I thought he passed away. Don't do that. I'm not putting it out there.
I'm going to try to get him out in the show next week.
That'd be great.
He's still playing the piano. I've had Calvin out several times. I mean, a legend. His wife was a legend. His wife has been in ill health, Malvolin. But the Dundalk connection, I didn't realize how deep this was going to go. Joe Giordano's here. You brought books. How many books do you have? You brought three.
Well, I bought three.
I feel like a turd. I didn't give you any of my books.
No, it's all right.
You don't read anyway. I'm a photographer.
No, I read a lot, actually. I read a lot.
You lived in Prague. You have to read. You're a
real
Renaissance man.
That's all I did was read. I had no television for like 4 or 5 years. So I brought three of the books. One of them, which is actually the more important one, 1323, which is
let's talk about it a little.
Pull them up if you want to go in order here.
Well, you tell me.
This is new. This is my only
ponies. I like that.
So this is my only self-published one. It's on Blurb. It's to commemorate the 150th running of the Preakness.
Okay.
So it's all my work, not that. That's somebody's.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Take the postcards out. Yeah. Take the postcards out. Oh, look at this. You got mud and pictures and all sorts of stuff here. Now, black and white is an art, as I look at it.
Yeah.
Give me the thesis on Joe Giordano, black and white versus color.
I mean, so it's going to bore your... Boy, your listeners. But no, I tell my students, if color is not part of the context of the picture, it's probably best in black and white, right? Like if you look out this window right now, you see, you know, two red stop signs, right? And then you have the black and white tune in Southeast Eaton Street, right? And then you have the yellow pylons over there.
I have the green of the trees here.
You can't really see because you're on this side. So you see the yellow pylons.
Yeah, bright yellow.
And then you see the stop sign, right? So that would be a color picture because the red of the stop sign and the yellow of the pylons is part of the photograph. Like, that's what you want people to look at is those colors.
But these ladies making coffee and this beautiful lady here wearing the Italian jersey.
Right. Well, no, but you still want that in color. See the blue of her shirt?
I want to see the oranges, right?
Yeah, see the way the sun comes through?
Right.
And hits that blue, right? That makes an interesting photo because the color is part of the context of the picture. Now, if there were two guys fighting out here, and you had the red stop sign and the yellow pylons and the blue shirt, what would you want to focus on?
The fight.
Right. So that's when you shoot in black and white. When you want someone to really focus on what's going on in the photograph as opposed to it looking nice or, you know, liking the colors, that's when you use black and white.
When I shoot a picture on my iPhone 12, which is still backed up because I don't have my little thing where I can eliminate all the background yet, and I take a picture in the way I take it, and I take a lot of pictures, and I've gotten good at framing and focusing and crop. I mean, I have all that journalism background, you know, for 40 years of doing it. So my pictures, I'm bougie about what I put up. I don't put up ishy pictures, you know. Mm-hmm. Take a picture, and the black and white setting on there, does it lose anything from shooting in black and white? Maybe I'm asking a silly question about aperture or any of that kind of stuff. But a picture that is shot in black and white, that's just purposely through a camera, does your eye see it differently than me converting a digital picture into the black and white setting? Or has digital gotten so good now, and AI, I guess, and you know whatever filters that we use, I just hit the filter now. I have no idea how it all works. Does that stuff annoy you as an artist, you know?
I'm not an artist.
Or is it like I don't use AI editing things to brush up my writing because I'm a friggin' writer. I don't want to know what AI thinks of my writing. I'm an editor. I wrote it the way I want. Now, spelling, maybe I would like if I've misplaced a word. But as an artist, as a writer, I don't want AI writing my column for me. I want to write my column. I would think as a photographer, the cameras have the ability to just take a picture, zoom in, crop, and if you don't mind grain, if you don't mind losing something, you can create images. And it's so fast and down and dirty now. He's bringing me lunch.
Oh, this is you?
Good.
I can't eat that.
I don't even know what it is, but I'm going to eat it. And yeah. They think I can eat and talk at the same time. This is what they do when you come to an Italian place.
I know.
Right?
I mean, it is feeding. I hear you.
Italians do it better. Darren's bringing me food over. He's got sausage sandwiches.
Nice.
If I start to eat it, I can't. I lose the ability to talk.
Got a box of sausage.
I know you got a box of sausage.
That sandwich looks amazing.
So from your perspective, with the question I asked on the picture, how do you feel about that as an artist? That if I take a color picture and try to turn it into black and white, what happens?
I mean, you have the ability to do it. So it's really your personal preference, right? Like, I mean, I've had color photos. You know, the thing with shooting digital black and white is, and really not until recently, I would say in the past year or so, have digital cameras really gotten to the point where you can shoot in black and white and it looks good. A lot of it had like halos around it and stuff like that.
That's why I'm asking, because I figured it might not be as good.
It's okay to convert. I mean, it's okay to convert it. It doesn't. You're not messing with the integrity of the picture, right? In other words, you're not taking out, you know, a stop sign that you don't want there, right? Even though it's in the picture.
Right.
That's to me, I can't do that. In the profession that I'm in, I mean, you can do it. You know, again, it's up to your eye. So I mean, you know, I don't.
In the profession you're in, the picture is the picture.
Right.
What happened is what happened.
You can crop, but you're not taking anything out of the picture that's not there. You're just cropping it. I mean, it's a very thin line, but cropping is okay. They do it in the darkroom. Basically, what I tell my students: if you can do it in the darkroom, you can do it in your phone or for work. You know, like cropping things, making things. Enlarging, cropping, stuff like that. But that's a professional mantra, right? But if you have a phone and you want to add filters, then add your Miami filters. It's up to you. You know, it's like there's no rules for this stuff. If you like the way it looks and your fans like the way it looks, then just keep doing it. I mean, there's AI people that work in AI. Not my thing, but that's their
thing. Well, you're a professor now of this as well, and young people who have never. Developed a piece of film. They never will. They don't have the photo mat.
I teach analog. No, I teach analog. So they in my classes they learn darkroom and developing.
Why? Why is that a valuable skill set at this point?
For photographers, because you can't learn to tell time on a digital watch.
I knew this was going to be a good segment.
That's what I tell my students. You want to have to take pictures? Start at the beginning. For students. Now, if you want to just pick one up and start shooting events and all that, that's cool. That's your thing. You know, I don't judge anybody. You know, like...
Where do you even buy film?
You get service photo. Service photo.
I mean, literally. Yeah, yeah. And where do you get it developed?
They're sold out. Because people right now...
Is Kodak at it? They don't make it anymore.
Yeah,
right? Kodak's still in business.
Yeah, they have Kodak Gold 400, 200. They actually had to stop producing film at the end of last year. And reset their factory because the demand is so high now for film. You can look that up. That was a news story.
So it's coming back, like the 80s.
Oh, yeah, it's coming back. I mean, you know, people bust on millennials, but they brought back vinyl records and they brought back film, so they're cool with me, you know?
Well, vinyl records are just heavy for me. That's where it is for me.
I'm too old to carry big things.
I collect small things, ticket stubs, things that are light.
Yeah.
Anything that has weight about it, I've learned.
I don't carry vinyl records around with me, but I keep them at home, Nestor.
But then you have to move eventually.
No, you
ever move a record? I live with Doug Bennett. Do you know how many albums he had?
Well, that's the thing. So I'm not a... you're right. I mean, but I have photo books, so my weight is going to be photo books. Like, I don't collect vinyl. You know, I like what I like, find it in a crate, buy it. Like, but I don't need to... I'm not a completist when it comes to vinyl stuff. You know, but no.
You're Berkshire. You must be rock, right? I mean,
me. I like jazz. I'm a jazz fan, and I do collect blaxploitation soundtracks. But I have all my mom's disco albums and stuff like that. See, it's really weird, man. See, this is our generation. This fascinates me. I'm just going to go off on a side track.
That's what we
here.
Do on the show. Joe Giordano is here, by the way.
This is
photographer extraordinaire.
No, I'm all right. Well, thank you. This is what's so interesting to me. As someone who's like early 50s, and you're mid 50s, right? Even even though it's not many years in between there, right? But it's like by the time I got to high school, Zeppelin was done, David Lee Roth was out of Van Halen,
Poison was done, right?
All the big band, like I mean, we were already at the end of hair metal, right? And the end of new wave. By the time I got to high school, But you and I are only like a few, you know, for like 4 years apart.
This is why this my wife and I had an Oasis conversation this morning.
Yeah, see, I love Oasis.
She loves Oasis.
Yeah.
And
how,
I'm like,
how old is she? If you mind me
she's
asking.
Your age.
Get it right.
She's born in 72.
Okay, yeah. So right. So it's just that little bit of room.
I said I don't know why
my music,
Oasis
like my rock
me,
is the 90s, right? Like my rock is like HF Festival, all that shit. Like my rock's 90s. I grew up in Berkshire. Like my babysitter's music was Zeppelin. Right, like Jack's Neighbors, right?
Right, I mean, even though
her kids are like, you know, 58, it's still not that much of a gap, right? It's not even 10 years, right? It's less than 10 year gap, but just when it came to like music and stuff and technology, that little bit of space is like a chasm. It's so, it's
I
so
hung
wild.
Out with
it's
a
so
younger
wild.
Person who became a dear friend of mine for a long time at the turn of the century. And he's about 10 years younger than me, you know, give or take. Little
47, right?
Yeah, 40, maybe 48. He's 50 now. Maybe he's 7 or 8 years younger than me. But he had the thing that he went to University of Maryland. He said he was the first incoming class there that got an email address.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And that changed his whole paradigm on communication. Was having an email address where people my age fought it for a little while in the same way that, you know, I remember Ed Hale fighting technology when I would sit down here and he was building this area. You know, when I would talk to people who were significantly older than me, 20 years older than me, they really had a different vibe about typing and typewriters. They weren't taught to type. So then computers came. Steve Bisciotti and I had that conversation. Mm. Steve Bisciotti never typed and he became a billionaire.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you're a billionaire and you don't type, right?
Like you hire all of a sudden, someone to do it.
Yeah, but how do you communicate with your kids when you're now given a keyboard and a BlackBerry and you're not proficient at typing?
But see, that to me is so alien.
Every young person knows how to type now, right?
Well,
literally, they have to.
It's interesting. Like I tell people, I'm the generation that has to show my parents and my students how to use a printer. Because neither one of them had to do it. But you know, it's interesting that there's a very good show I think every parent should watch called Adolescence. It's on Netflix, right? That's an incredible. Can we just talk about that sandwich?
No. Talk about Netflix.
Okay.
That's
an incredible
we're
sandwich.
Eat this. Well, go ahead. You do Netflix, and then I'll promote my wife in the sandwich.
Anyway, but parents need to be up with what their kids are doing. Like they really do, and I have relatives that have no idea what my younger relatives are up to. I don't know who's listening, so I can't single out the specific
anybody
relatives. No, but I mean,
no
I'm
one
just,
listens to this show.
No, I'm just saying. But like to not be able to type and not, you know, not have your kids type. Thank you. Not have your kids type, whatever. You need to be up on technology. Like
that's why the AI thing got me this summer. Is like I'm not going to be asleep at the wheel on this.
No, that's
I'm
exactly
not,
how
no
you
way.
Should be. That's exactly how.
The
you
only
should
thing
be.
Is to keep me young
because
right?
you're in your profession. I predict in the next 2 years, you're going to see AI-generated podcasts that don't need to be paid, that don't need to get the clicks, don't need to get the likes, don't need to get the subscriptions. They're going to be fake people doing podcasts. I guarantee
you. We already
coming.
Have fake music, you know.
I know. I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, this is you have to think ahead. So that's so. How does someone like you get on top of that? How does someone in the photo business get on top of that? In my profession, hopefully, knock on wood, people, you know, we're having a harder time getting people to look at news photographs and what's real and what's not real because, you know, everything's just being flooded right now. But they still have a need for news photographs. They still need to see what's going on somewhere. And some institutions they trust to show them that, like Associated Press, Reuters. I'm just talking photo, not
sure.
writing. Getty, you know. What, you know, they can say what they want.
I've gotten
Washington
a letter
Post.
From Getty in the
no,
past
yeah,
about
yeah.
you know using a picture that I shouldn't have been used.
Oh well, yeah, I mean,
and that's it.
Know,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't do that. You know?
I mean, you know, even though whatever you think of the New York Times and Washington Post, they still have pretty high subscription rates. You know, even through Trump, right? So they're not failing, as he likes to say, because people know that those two institutions, they can look to them for like non-AI photographs.
Right.
You know what I mean? In the end of the day, they can say what
they
want.
I used to think I could look to 60 Minutes for journalism, but you know that's breaking down now.
But 60 Minutes wasn't really. I mean, but 60 Minutes isn't really journalism, right? I mean, 60 Minutes. You know, you have Mike Wallace basically doing the Jesse Waters got his whole shtick from Mike Wallace.
Sure.
Showing up at someone's house, you know, banging on the door, "Hey, Mr. GM, President, you took a bunch of money." I mean, that's 60 Minutes. You know, I don't watch 60 Minutes. There's only two news programs. There's only two news that I watch. And none of them are mainstream media. So, and WJZ. I watch JZ. And WBAL. Those are my two locals. But anyway, I mean, back to, you know, you have to get on top of this AI thing. You really do. And you're doing the right thing by this summer. But the thing is, you can't really study it because it moves so fast. Right?
Learning you have to dive in. It's like the internet. You're not going to learn about it unless you're in it.
Yeah. It's a tool, right? I mean, for me, you know, so Adobe Photoshop has AI. They rolled AI into it last year. Now, you can change the backgrounds and all that business, but there's also a tool in the Photoshop that was already there that's enhanced by AI, and it's noise reduction. So there's this, you know, discussion within the photojournalism community. When you say no AI, you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean no AI? You know, because the noise reduction filter, the noise reduction slider was already there. So if it were at a concert, I take a picture, right? And you get all that digital noise because it's dark and there's no light. So AI will just smooth that out, right? It'll just get rid of it'll get rid of that pixelation, right? But that was already in Photoshop. They just rolled a smarter version in, right? So is that wrong? I don't know.
Well, if you have an old picture of your family and it's beaten up and something would bring it back to life the way that...
But now you can move
in the way
them.
That Gilligan's Island and I Love Lucy were colorized 25 years ago, right?
Well, exactly.
Literally.
Exactly. Well, yeah, Lucy was colorized.
Gilligan's Island went to color. It had black and white.
They were on like...
I think they colorized some of the black and white ones, though.
I thought Gilligan was all in color. That's all I remember was color.
No, first season, black and white. Oh, sit right back and we'll hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea that started as black and white. But anyway, so, like, you know, to get a handle on this, but now they have pictures that talk. So now we're in the Harry Potter world, right, where you have pictures that move and talk. Right, you have front pages in newspapers or whatever that can move and talk using AI. So you can bring your grandparents back to life in a photograph. If you have a copy of their voice, you can get them to talk to you in the photograph.
All right, we're going to take a break on that. I mean, where's Darren? Is Darren around? Because he brought me a – he just came up, threw a sandwich at me.
Yeah.
And I know it's got sausage in it because it's Darren. Is that Scrapple? Because if that's Scrapple, we're going to have a talk. Is that Scrapple? Don't make me any Scrapple in here. Dom, come on here, man. Let me put this in here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Joe Giordano is here. Dom is about to join us. We were at Deep Pasquale. I haven't promoted, but I gave some lottery tickets out to the staff here. You get one. I'm like Oprah. Joe Giordano is going to get one. The Back to the Future scratch-offs. We're going to be on Thursday at Costas and Timonium. I was there with Johnny O on Monday night. I'm going to be at Costas twice this week, so a lot of crab cakes. My wife this morning, you can pot that up, and I'll make sure that you can hear me and all that stuff. So my wife this morning on the way out the door, because my wife's my wife, I got coffee. She says, let me move over here and make some space. I'm going to stand up. You move in. So she said, you're not bringing me more food, are you? That's not for me. That's for patrons. Good. All right. I see omelets come. I see stuff happening here. My wife says, you want me to make you some fruit? You're going to be hungry this morning? I'm like... I'm going to Deep Pasquale's. I'm here at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're going to have pastries. They're going to have traditional cannoli and cannoli trios and panettone bread pudding and Nutella fried dough and a cookie plate and all that. Darren wants to come in here, too. And hold on. I don't have him plugged in. Let me do this. I just want to hear about the food, and then we're going to go back talk about photojournalism because they brought me food. Here you go. Darren, you got to come in. Stand up for me, bud. I'm going to make everything happen here. I'm going to get everybody in here and get this live. The Sausage King has arrived. This better not be Scrapple. You didn't give me Scrapple, did you, Darren?
No.
No, all right. I don't know why I can't hear you right now, but I will hear you. Go ahead. No, say no. There he is on the – Now, this is not your first go-around on WNST. Darren was a longtime caller and a friend to everything we do. And he just came up. We were talking about black and white and color photography. And he slaps down a sandwich that – here, I won't touch your side there, Joe. But I see –
Oh, I'm good, man.
You're going to eat this.
No way. I can't.
You can't?
I can't do the cream. I can't do it. Sorry.
It's okay.
But I tell you what.
I got to get you on mic. That's all right.
See, listen, just so you know, I will take a Santino. But
all right. Well,
come out later.
What is this, Darren?
That is the Porcello. So we have the fresh sausage patty, the roasted ham, the pancetta, cheddar, and then we have a secret chef sauce right on top.
Oh, whoa. What kind of secret? What kind of secret is it? Is it cheesy? It looks
It's creamy.
It looks like the secret sauce at McDonald's is what it looks like. I mean, it looks like Thousand Island with something, something, something. But what is it?
It's a secret. I don't even know. So it's just like a little creamy. I believe there's some mayo in there.
Hey, look, I know you're Italian, all of you. You got to stop feeding me. I mean, it just...
Yeah, you weigh like
dude,
a
it's 9:35 in the morning. This is 1:48.
That's one of our breakfast sandwiches right there.
All right, well, I...
Look at this over here. You look like a bird over here. Look at this over here. See, my family's from South Philly, so they all talk like that. My dad's from South Philly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's from Berkshire and from Colgate. I didn't realize that until we sat down together.
Oh.
I've been watching his work forever, and I don't know him. And he thinks I'm nasty.
As long as you know my work, that's all I care about, you know?
Darren, what's going on with you?
I'm going to put some weight on you today, Nestor.
There you go.
I can see this.
There you go.
This whole thing happened because of him, so let me give the whole thing. Darren's been a listener for years. His family was in the sausage business. I have had recently some just subpar sausages, and I don't just mean here or in a store or whatever. I've traveled a little bit, and I'm a guy that if I'm in a New York deli that's like Di Pasquale's and I'm going to order pizza, I like sausage on my pizza, but – I don't trust sausage. When it says Italian sausage, I've had this man's Italians do it better. And he used to bring sausage out all the time. And I'll tell you, I didn't say it at the time for you and your brother and your family. I was spoiled on sausage. And then the last couple of years, I haven't been able to find sausage I like. So I reached your brother on LinkedIn about 6 weeks ago. And I'm like, look, I know your family's out of the sausage business, but do recommend some sausage. I had some artisan sausage I bought at the farmer's market.
What kind of woke nonsense is that, man? What kind of American are you? Artisan sausage.
It was made in Rockville or something, all right?
Get your Ostrowskis. Get your Roma.
So I brought sausage home, and it was really good a couple of summers ago.
Get your Di Pasquale sausage.
Well, that's
you guys
why
make your
I'm
own
here.
Sausage?
We do.
This is the sausage king.
Yeah. Yes. Why don't I take it all back? That's artisan.
I make
Appaldanza.
Right,
that's good.
I make it right here on location, fresh every day. Buy nothing but the best pork. I used the bonus Boston butts. Everything's natural ingredients.
Joe says everything but the squeal. Is that true?
No, that's not true.
So this is ham, sausage. What's that thing underneath? Is that red pepper under there? Is that like a bacon?
That's pancetta.
Pancetta. My wife puts that into... Brussels sprouts. We make a little pancetta on the bottom there.
That sandwich looks really good.
Here, you got half. I can't eat the whole thing, Derek. Come on, man.
Well, you need an extra plate?
Get another plate. I hear they got that. Yo, don't get up off of here. Hold on. Stay on my set.
I thought you were from Dundalk. Take it home for lunch tomorrow. Like my mom's like, put that away.
They're not done bringing me food. That's the problem. So my wife was going to...
Well, you are an Italian household.
My wife was going to give me fruit and put in the car and make me cereal this morning. That's how I stay like this. Blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. But I want some meat, man. You know, I'm down here at Di Pasquale. So what's this sandwich called on the menu?
The Porcello.
All right, here we go. You guys have to talk if I'm eating. This is Darren. You
can't
have
dead air. Can't have
Darren,
dead
just
air.
Darren, sports radio.
I'll have the other half.
Yeah, there you go. I knew you could.
There you go, Santino.
Yeah, I'll move this mic out.
He works out. He's good. What was your family sausage?
Well, we started out at Roma Sausage.
Roma, okay.
And I started May the 20th, 1986. So I've been making it for 39 years. Me and my brother had Roma. And then we got out of it. And then Joe called me one day and said, hey, let's get together and talk. So we started planning it out, and I pretty much created it from scratch. Joe just tells me, whatever you need, Darren, just let me know, and he lets me do my thing. I honestly believe that we have the best sausage out there. Hands down.
Every day he's trying to perfect it, too. He's
What's the secret to good sausage?
He's offered me all kinds of different sausages. Yeah. I don't know one from the other. They're just delicious.
The secret to the sausage, first of all, you have to have a good recipe, which I have the best recipe out there. You got to have a really good pork. Not the pork that shrivels up when you cook it. You buy top-grade pork, your recipe, and you don't cut no corners. You cut off the excess fat. You do everything the right way, and then you let the product speak for itself. By the way, we will be in the grocery stores coming soon, so look for it. Di Pasquale's sausage.
Now, you gave me Italian sausage that I took home, and I'm not bullshitting you here, man. I'm in your place. I told my wife about the legend of you, He would bring sausage out to the radio station 20 years ago. And oh my God, and we have, I'd walk in the station, it'd be raw sausage in a white box. So I connected with him about 4 weeks ago, and like Monday or Tuesday, he's like, I'm going to make it. I want it to be fresh. You got to have it fresh. You're either going to eat it or freeze it. You can't have it sit in the refrigerator 5 days. Yes. It doesn't have preservatives in it.
I don't put no preservatives in it. No chemicals whatsoever.
So my wife and I, and I'm negotiating with him, and he's texting me 5 times a day. When he come, I'm like, Saturday. Let's do Saturday. My wife had never been in here. My wife had been in your old location. We left downtown 3.5 years ago. When did you open this, Tom?
2021.
All right. So we left in early 22, masks on. We moved out to Towson. And I hadn't been in your new space other than when you opened right away. I walked in. I was here like the weekend it opened. There was a lot of people here. And I didn't, you know, it was just, I saw it, knew about it, whatever. And I said to my wife, I'm going to take you down because she didn't come. Mm-hmm. I said, you're going to be blown away because she had driven by and seen the outside. And I brought her in. We were here on a busy Saturday morning, about 11 o'clock in the morning. We came, it was packed. And I saw Joe, and he left me a box of sausage. And my wife bought some things. We bought your broccoli Rob ravioli out of that case over there, and I took that home. He gave me so much sausage that, like, all I wanted was 4 links on a roll. I just wanted to, like, have a barbecue and have some peppers and onions.
Well, we do it right here at Di Pasquale's.
That's all I wanted from you was a couple sausage links.
Nah,
he gave me, like, maybe 15 sausage links in a box. And I took them home, and I said to my wife, like, we got to figure this out. So we did sauce, tomato sauce. We used the Michi sauce because I had that in the freezer. I buy the Michael's of Brooklyn in the jars in the stores. I did not buy your sauce because I had sauce.
Oh, Maron, what's the matter with
well,
you?
Well, I'm here today, right? I'm
in
using
jar?
What I have.
Kind of Italian, are
I use
you?
What I had.
In a jar.
So my wife has now made apparently. The sausages as links, as a sauce with 2 different sauces. I think she did something else with some of it. And every time she's eating it, she's like, this is great. I mean, literally, she's like, this is great. And I'm like, this is what we were missing. Every time that we had subpar sausage in our, because my wife makes sausage and lentil soups, right? And she uses the wrong sausage for that, but we will never do that again. But she uses Italian sausage for that. So we use sausage in different things we make around the house because my wife's a hell of a cook. And now we come down and find this sausage here. So that's what, I came here and I'm like, I got to do the show here. I didn't know you had a crab cake. So a month later, Darren, you have inspired a whole – Nancy Longo's going to come here and talk foodie stuff
I know Nancy.
She's going to be here in a little bit. Yeah, we're going to talk crab cakes with Nancy.
Nancy's good.
Well, you know all the good cooks.
I know Nancy very well. We came out with a new sausage. Joe, you know, the owner, who is – we all feed off of him. He's
too busy to come over now. We're going to bring him later.
Joe's always positive. He's great to work for, but we came out with a new sausage.
Need a raise.
It's called provolone. It's called provolone and parsley, and it's phenomenal. You have to come in and buy some. It's really, really good.
And when's this hit the stores?
It's going to be in this store Thursday, starting this Thursday. It's going to be in this store. So come in this weekend and buy some. I think you'll love it.
Say this again. Par.
Provolone and parsley.
So it's got cheese in it.
Yes, every bite you just—it's sharp provolone cheese.
Do you want
parsley.
Me to eat your sausage plain, or do you want me to put peppers and onions on, or to get something out of the deli case? And how do you dress it up?
I want you to make it the way you like. I mean, the sausage speaks for itself. You want to dress it up with peppers and onions—that's fine. But you can also eat it plain, which is excellent. Like when I go to cookouts, I'll just take one off the grill without any bread or anything, and just eat it that way. Really like it.
I do the same.
And if
right off the grill.
Yeah. And if you like the hot, I suggest getting our hot because it's got a little zing to it.
1 to 10, how hot?
Oh.
How many peppers you giving me here?
1 to 10 on hot, I'd say it's, I don't know, 7, 8.
That's hot. Okay.
Yeah, it's got a nice zing to it. If you're going to buy hot, that's what you want. And I believe we have the best hot around. It's not too hot to where you're like, oh, it just leaves that nice zing in your mouth.
I can't believe you brought me sausage with ham and pancetta. Look at this thing.
Sausage goes with everything, Nestor.
No raspberries from you this morning. All right.
Yeah.
I got to take a break. Joe's here. Dom's here. Darren's here. I'm going to let you guys go work. You and your dad are going to come by, and you're going to tell me the whole story.
Yep. We'll be
back. Maybe I can't eat. and do the show. You see what's happening here?
Sorry, Nestor. You can chew and talk same time.
I feel like Clara Peller in the old Wendy's. You know, where's the beef? And you know, doing
by the time you leave here, you're gonna have a couple more pounds on you, probably.
All right. Well, I gotta get some drinks here, too.
Joe likes to feed people.
Joe's gonna hang out and do some photojournalism. Nancy Longo's coming by later. Dom and Joe are coming back. I'm sure they're bringing Darren. It's not even 10 a.m. and I'm already eating sausage. So down here at Deep Pasquale's, it is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. There is going to be a crab cake, right?
Yep, coming up.
Now, who inspired your crab cake?
My mother.
This Italian crab cake.
It's Italian style crab cake.
Italian, yeah. Highland Town crab cake. Darren, yeah, will recognize that, yeah, right?
It's very good.
All right, Darren the Sausage King is here. He has inspired all of this today. Joe and Dom are going to come back. And I had Dan Rogers coming by, but he had a little family thing. He's going to join us next Friday because I did promote that. Oh, and Carinji.
Pete Carinji's coming by around 11:30, I believe. I talked to him yesterday.
Are you going
to
serve him sausage?
I talked to him yesterday, and he's definitely coming by. Oh, he loves our sausage. He loves it.
I'm going to eat sausage with Pete.
Yeah, Pete, 11:45 Pete is a good dude.
It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Darren, you get a lottery ticket. Dom, you get a lottery ticket as well. I already gave
Thank
Joe
you.
One. One yeah, for everybody.
Yeah, I won nothing. I lost.
Well, so. It, you know, now listen. This is where you learn about second chances. You have to scan the ticket. You have to download the app, mdlottery.com. You get second chances, and second chances is that's how you, like, go places and do different things. There you go. Good luck. Maryland Lottery brings this to you, as well as our friends at Curio Wellness and Liberty Pure Solutions. We call it the Maryland Crab Cake Tour today. It is the Highland Town via Canton Italian Sausage Tour. We're down here at Deep Pasquale. Stay with us.